All right, welcome to our first week of Parent Book Club. If you haven't joined us before, we are going through the book Family Driven Faith by Vonnie Bachman. Today we're going to be covering the introduction and then also chapter one in a separate video. If this is your first time watching, all three of us are members of Stonebridge Baptist Church. And what we're doing is I as the children's leader, Colin as the youth leader, and then Dan as a father who has kids in nursery, children's, and youth. We're just kind of coming together, talking about what Vadi discusses in each chapter, and then also having a conversation on do we agree? How do we wrestle with that? How are we applying these different pieces of truth to our lives? So we're going to start with the introduction of the book, and I got some main points for us, guys. Just overall, how did you feel about the intro?
No, I really like the intro. He kind of sets the precedent right with the problem that the church is facing. And he throws some stats out there. I know you're probably going to get into it on the youth when they leave the home and on their relationship status with the church, with the faith in general. So he brings up a lot of those concerns right at the forefront for us to kind of get into and tackle.
Yeah, that problem you're discussing, Dan, is he mentions, depending on the statistic and who you look at, but somewhere between high 80s to low 90% of church kids, not general population, church kids, after 18, when they get the decision to make about whether they go to church or not, most of them are bailing. And so that's crazy that, again, not outside children, not just general population, but the church children who grew up in the church. 80, 90% of them are bailing as soon as they get the chance to make their own decision. Colin, was there anything else that really stood out to you in this chapter before we go through point by point?
I agree with a lot of you fellows' points. Again, just really looking at the stats was very, very disheartening, and it's just kind of alarming. So it's just one of those where I'm like, hey, and we'll get into this as a book as we go over some of the book, but just what is causing this issue, right? And it's kind of deepening, looking into that, and then just saying, man, what on earth am I doing within my own household, right, to ensure, right, as a father, that this doesn't happen to my kids, right? But yeah, it's just very disheartening.
Yeah, I think for me that centering on the problem, and I think the whole gist to me of the intro is he doesn't really necessarily get into a ton of application yet, but it's laying the groundwork for the problem that we're facing as a church. And I think one of the things I hope everybody has as they go through a book like this, because especially if you haven't read it before, Vadi's going to hit with stuff that gets to your heart, gets to your soul, gets to your mind. It's not traditional, at least in the sense of like what we would call traditional in America. It's traditional if you go back longer, right? Your perspective changes depending on your timelines. But I think the biggest thing that we center on in the introduction is there is a problem. And the things that the church has been trying to do, especially in the United States, have not been working and have not been helping. In fact, the trend is only getting worse. And so my challenge to everybody who reads the book as you go through this is you may not always agree on his application points. You may not always agree with the tactics he deploys, but hopefully we can all come together that this is a problem. And for us to just put our heads down and keep doing what we've been doing for 30, 40 years, that's probably not the right answer. And so each of us in our homes, and then each of us collectively in our churches, probably need to start brainstorming, trying new things, doing different things to try to get a more biblical background into our kids' lives so that we're not seeing them dump out of the church as fast as possible the moment they have a choice to make of their own. Let's talk about the kind of the second big point. So his first big point's the problem, which is the kids are leaving at this alarming rate. The second thing he really stresses is that the current tactics aren't working. And what he really focuses on is if you look at the last 20, 30 years, all of the focus has been on the professionalization and the improvement of children and youth ministries. And so he's like, that's not working. Now, obviously, I'm offended by this because I'm a children's minister. And Colin, you're obviously offended by this because you're leading our youth group. So, I mean, right, he's wrong here, right? How do we feel about this point that it's not about the children's and youth ministries?
I think we definitely need to focus on the children's ministry, right, and the youth aspect, and making sure that we're setting them up right, and equip them for the walk. But I think I was kind of getting what he was getting after, that hey, this isn't solely on the youth pastor or the children's pastor, right? And putting the onus and responsibility back on the parents, because, hey, if you're attending church on Wednesdays and Sundays, right, and that's, few and far between sometimes. You're only getting them at best 2 to 3 hours a week. So there's a lot of time there that if they're not getting fed at home, right, it puts them in a very bad situation. It makes sense to see some of the trends going the way they are.
Well, and just kind of added that, so some stats too. I know this isn't particular to the youth, right? But in 1990, you know, United States, everyone in the United States claimed there was a 90% Christian. You know, they would claim Christian. Now, that doesn't mean that they are born again believers, right? Just you claim something. But, you know, as of 2017, you know, America says, you know, 63% Christian. Again, that doesn't mean they are. But then you see the church seeing the dwindling numbers of people coming to church, and they try to change these different, you know, ways of bringing people in. And I've seen with the youth ministries around the evangelical world, hey, let's make it not about teaching doctrine, not theology, who is God, how do we relate to God, how do we become reconciled to God. Rather, it's let's make it's fun. Let's make this, you know, an enjoyment place to come and just have fun and not teach these things, right? It's very, hey, here's a Bible story, but like, where is Jesus in all of this? There's none of that, right? So, and I think that's a problem that we obviously see. And then obviously, not the discipleship in the home.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he will get into things throughout this book that kind of pick at optimizing, improving, or even eliminating certain elements of youth and children's ministry. But I think the bigger premise is that a lot of parents have outsourced the discipleship of their children to the church. Yes. And so at home, Monday through, you know, Saturday, and then even Sunday from lunchtime afterwards, if you went to a lot of these people's homes, they would look no different than people who aren't self-professed Christians. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll never forget when this moment kind of hit me. I was in the ministry for 20 years, senior pastor for 7, but before that I was a youth leader. And I remember when I finally started having some kids getting older, I'd be asking like, so what are you guys going to do? Like, what do you want to do with your life? What careers do you want to go to? And it really hit me because so many of them would be like, oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a businessman. I'd be like, okay, cool. Why? And the answer was always the same. I want money. I want to be rich. I want to be powerful. I want to do something cool. And I'm sitting there and listening to these conversations, and I'm like, these are exactly the same answers that I would get from non-Christian kids.
Right.
And how is it possible that, especially the kids that I was talking to, like literally they'd been born into the church, had gone to church every Sunday and every Wednesday for their entire lives. And yet here they are sitting at 18. And when you ask them, okay, so how are you going to make a career decision? Their number one motive was what brings me cash.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there going, how does that happen? How do we raise a kid who supposedly is in a biblical worldview, has a relationship with Jesus Christ, and though scripture would tell you pursuit of money, love of money is the root of all evil, that pursuing these things will only lead to emptiness, that pride will lead to your fall, right? All these scriptural things say those are the wrong paths to go. And here is the dedicated, devoted, churched kids who you would think like every other parent would be like, oh, I hope my kids are like those. And they're sitting here going, I want money. I want fame. I want popularity. I want other people to be impressed by what I do. And it was that moment that I'm like, man, this is a problem. And what you really kind of get to is it's that at home, the parents are not teaching a biblical worldview to their children. They're also not necessarily introducing their children to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Many times what the parents are doing is they are leading their children to Christian behavioral modification.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm going to get my kid to talk like and act like a Christian. And normally there's even a caveat with some people where it's like, talk like and act like a Christian at church.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we do. We're at church. This is what we do. But now we're outside of church. Hey, we're not at church no more. So we just, you know, do what you want.
And sometimes it's I've seen a varying degree of the problem. Sometimes it's that the parents are the same way. And so the parents are also just acting at church. And if you'd actually be with them day in and day out, you'd be like, man, there's a lot of inconsistencies here between biblical values and how you portray yourself at church versus how you are at work and at home. Sometimes it's not necessarily that, but their own spiritual maturity and intelligence is so immature that they're struggling themselves to even just take baby steps, let alone raising up kids any further.
Yes.
And so their target had always just been if I can get them to look like, talk like, and sound like a Christian, then that must be it.
So yeah, and I want to add to that too, because that's you're 100% right, because I think this is a multi-generational issue. So when you talk about discipleship in the home, if the parents weren't discipled properly on, you know, what is the gospel? How do you teach your kids the gospel? How do we live out the gospel? How do we view what we do in a biblical way through a gospel lens and apply that to our family life and to raise up warriors that love the Lord? If they weren't taught that, like you said, they're just like, hey, this is what I know. I'm coming to church because I think that's just like what I have to do. And that's all they have. That's all the tools they have in their toolbox to really do. And I think that's what's going to be good about this book, is it's going to maybe throw that accountability out there where we're not going to really feel it. Because, I mean, I was reading chapter one and I'm like, oh, man, like, Lord, forgive me. I'm falling short as a leader in the home. But I think this what's going to be good about this book is that check that we need, and maybe give that equipping that people need to kind of get going.
Well, yeah, there needs to be – go, Colin.
No, I'm sorry. Just mentioning, like, you know, kind of what you fellas were saying, this was a convicting portion for me, like back in like 2019, 2020, while I was away for the family from an extended period of time. And it's just like, man, understanding the reality that children come from the Lord. And yet as a father, these are responsibilities that Scripture lays out. And up until that point, right, take them to church. We do the things. This is what we look like. We act like, right? But rather really than guiding them within the household and how to properly apply those things. And I think that's one big aspect is, you know, we say, hey, this is what you do, but we don't really teach them how to apply, or at least I didn't. Mm-hmm. So excuse me. So definitely convicted me. And so this is why I kind of passionate about this and love it and try to get better at it.
Hey, and let me just wrap up the intro with one thing I think we all need to keep in mind. And I think this is important, not just for this book. I think it's important for churches as a whole. As you read this book, Vadi is going to continually point to the biblical model, the optimal model. And so when you talk about an optimal model, right, you're talking about a husband and a wife, both Christians, both in a loving marriage, raising their children in a church. And for a lot of people who come to this, they're going to go, that's not me. Like, we're divorced, or I'm a single parent, or I don't have a church home. And so you're immediately going to go like, I feel guilty. I feel judged. Right. There's all these emotions that come from that. And I think there's two important things that we have to remember. And again, not just for this book, but just as Christians as a whole, God's grace is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And so God's grace is throughout Scripture. You will continually find him take the non-optimal situation, mm-hmm. and with his love and power and grace, turn it into something unbelievably beautiful and amazing. And so if you're sitting there watching this or reading this book and you're going, man, that's not me. I don't have those things. I don't know that I can get those things. So are my kids just, it's over for them? No. God is awesome. He fills the gaps. That's what he does. He is faithful. At the same time, though, what we need to be careful of as individuals and as churches is that in our goal to not offend people who aren't in the optimal situation, sometimes what we do is we act like there is no optimal situation. And so because we don't want to offend, like, I'll give you an example. I've seen on churches on Mother's Day go like, I don't even know if we want to acknowledge moms, because like, there's people who don't have moms, and then they might feel bad because we lifted up these biblical moms, but then other people don't have. And it's like, guys, no, like, I get it. I'm glad you're thinking about those people, but this is still a good and glorious thing that God has given. And this is the optimal model that he wants, and we should be striving for that. And even if we know we can't get there, I still believe there is great strength in you knowing what you're missing. Right? So if you're a single mom going like, I don't have a husband in my life, you should still just as much as a husband know what was that role, what should that example be, what are those responsibilities God expects of that person, and then know this is a gap. And so I need to be aware this is a blind spot, this is a gap, how can I fill it? And so I would just encourage everybody as you read it, it's so easy to become offended and then go like, I'm going to close the book and stop reading. And instead, I think what we should all acknowledge is like, his goal here is love. His goal here is to highlight what God has highlighted in Scripture. And that even if we find ourselves quite a distance from the biblical model, we should be striving to get there as much as we can. And we still have faith in God's grace to close those gaps for us. And so that'd just be the last thing I say. Anything else you guys want to throw in before we wrap up the intro?
No, you hit it great.
All right. Well, thanks for turning in for the first video. We'll have chapter one coming soon for you and doing the exact same thing. Thanks.